Start about talking about cool features in Hyper-V. As Louis-Philippe already says, I do work indeed for Veeam software. If you have questions after this presentation, for example, if there's not enough time at the end for Q&A, or you might come up with a question afterwards, feel free to email me. I've got a very simple email address, basically because my last name is very difficult to write, but you can also reach out on me on Twitter if you want to. I will do apologize already if it takes a little bit of time before response. I spend a lot of my time in airports and planes, and it's not always easy to respond as soon as possible, but I'll do my best. That being said, let's look at the agenda today. Quick introduction, not too much, but then I want to dive into the more technical stuff where we're going to talk about 10 different items that you want to review today. And then in the end, we're going to look at a small conclusion, and I believe then the chat will be opened for Q&A again. So let's get started because I've got few things to say. I've got some demos to show, and I've got about 15 minutes left. So let's get started. The introduction, I specifically left this slide empty because what I actually wanted to do is talk to you about Windows Server 2016. And of course, since the topic is today Hyper-V, Hyper-V 2016. And one of the things I've been doing lately, or the things I need to do in my job, is think on the future. Think longer than a couple of months, but really look together with enterprises, with small businesses, how they can define their IT for the next couple of years. And what I notice is that many IT professionals won't start with Windows Server 2016, even investigate it, before it actually hits GA. And I'm hoping that I can convince you here today that that is a really bad idea. The reason for that is something which is called now Windows as a Server. Now, I'm going to come back at it very briefly at the end of the presentation, but the idea here is that you have to think that Windows won't come in editions anymore. Now, that of course might all change in the future, you never know, but just think about the fact that Windows Server now will come with sort of updates, which will introduce new functionality, new features, enhancements, and so on, and will come on a regular basis. Those of you who are already working with Windows 10 client and that are in the insider ranks, they know that this is a new way of working Microsoft is doing. Now, important here when you talk about Windows Server is that you don't want to just deploy this whenever there's a new update. You do want to do some testing. You do want to see what is value for you and what is not. So the idea here is that now that we're a technical preview four, is that your teams and yourself start to work with Windows Server 2016 already, that you are as fast as possibly ready to support your business with the new functionality. Now, why would you want to do that? Very simple. In this modern world where everything has to run 24/7, where we have shadow IT, where people can just take a credit card and start ordering resources from Azure or Amazon or Google Cloud or whatever cloud you want to use, it is important that we as IT pros keep up to date as fast as possible as well. Now, if you only start investigating Windows Server 2016 the moment it becomes GA, you're going to be way late. So the idea here is, and especially with the amount of new functionality there is in 2016, that you start already, if you're not doing it at least already, by investigating today together with your teams, and that you divide the workloads. Just today with Hyper-V, I'm going to show you a couple of things which are already massively just to study on your own. So think about everything else within Windows Server 2016, such as Active Directory, such as clustering, such as new DNS, DHCP, and networking functionality comes in. You're probably going to need to have a good plan, and you probably need to go to start now. That being said, let me show you a few things that you should look at when you're going to look at Hyper-V in Windows Server 2016. And let's start with the first one, which is called Nano Server. Now, Nano Server is a complete headless server. What we mean by that is that instead of having a fully installed server with all the GUI elements on it, with MMCs in it, and so on, what we get now is a server installation. It's still being installed somewhere on your hard drive, but it contains literally nothing besides the kernel. It's got no user interface, it's got no management consoles. Everything you do in there will be through remote management, but it also has a very extreme low footprint. Now, the moment you want to deploy workloads on it, because in the end, that's the reason why you want to deploy a server, you're going to have to deploy packages. As of today in TP4, there are quite a few packages already. We've got Hyper-V package, we've got scale-up file server package, we've got clustering functionality, DNS, IIS, and of course the possibility to deploy or to develop your own workloads on that. Now, why do I say this is extremely important? Because it will change the way you work, but it also will change the way you address your resources. Now, sorry, one slide back. Let me see if I can quickly jump to my server here. And if all goes well, you should be able to see my desktop at this moment, and I hope it goes well. And one of the things I want to show you, and let me quickly jump to my PowerShell here, let me go to Nano, is that the way you're going to deploy Nano Server is not anymore doing install, next, choose a few options, and finish. What you're going to do is you really are going to build a specific image that comes from a media pod, a base pod, and then actually will write out a VHD. Now that VHD will be able to be used depending on your settings on a physical machine. So you can deploy a lot of nano physical Hyper-V boxes, for example, but can be used as a virtual machine as well. Now, very important here is that when you do this, this is an extremely small image. And let me show you that straight here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to my data drive. I'm going to go to one of my nano servers, this one. And here you can see that my hard drive is actually 466 and a bit megabyte large. Now, this is a base image with nothing on it. So if we quickly jump to another one, you will see I've got here one which is 719 megabyte large. Now, this specific one is a clustered Hyper-V host that is joined to the domain. And it still is 700 and something megabyte large and running right here. Now, if we're going to look at my Hyper-V host, what you're going to see here, for example, one of them is Nano 03, which is running. I only gave it 256 megabyte of RAM. Now, let's be honest, I won't be running any virtual machines inside here, but just look at the fact that this base image with a couple of packages installed can perfectly run on 256 megabytes. Now, I told you it's completely headless, and you will see it as well when I open the console. And it's going to connect, and I hope this is going to work. Let's see, here we go. And what you're going to see now is that, let me go back. My server configuration just simply tells me what domain I am, what the operating system, and you can see I'm actually still working for this one on preview 3 and not on preview 4, what my Ethernet is, and then I have very few console settings where I can see what is my adapter, how can I configure it, and what are the different IP addresses. Now, Microsoft has promised us that in the future we will be able through this console to do a little bit more, but please note that most of the work you will need to do remotely by using PowerShell Direct, which I'm going to talk about very soon, by using the management consoles that you have on a client workstation, for example. You will be able to use Server Manager. There will be a functionality in Azure, which will give you the possibility to manage those devices. But you're also going to have to work more with scripts. And let me give you a quick example on those as well. I'm going to go to here. And one of the things, for example, is that I've built a few PowerShell scripts that will actually show you what you need to do to change the firewall, for example. Now, as you can see, this is quite easy. It's not even that difficult, because what I do is I set an item, trusted host. I only need to do this once, but that is to make sure that my client trusts that host. Then I'm going to give the IP address, which I can do with computer name as well, of course, depending on how the DNS and the DHCP is set up. And then I'm going to use enter PS session. I'm going to come back to this one specifically because that is PowerShell Direct. And then I'm using a netsh command. Now, let's be honest here. These are quite a few commands you're not going to use every day, which means it's going to be rather difficult to memorize those. So I advise you, in the moment you start with Nano, you're going to build your scripts, you're going to build your one-liners, and you're going to store them somewhere so you can reuse them whenever is necessary. Now, other things you might need to do is use, for example, a setup complete. Now, the first time your Nano server is going to boot, if you inject this through DISM into your VHD, what it's going to do, it's going to run a few commands the first time. Now, in this case, what I'm doing is I'm loading some PowerShell modules, but more importantly, what I'm doing is I'm going to add a static IP address, a specific subnet mask, and then actually put the DNS names in there as well. Now, I'm not going to go too deep into this because this could be a session of 1 hour on its own, but know that you might need to change the way you deploy your virtual machines or your physical machines if you want to work with Nano. But don't be scared of it, because after you've done it first for one time, as you can see that I've done once right here, everything will be much smoother, and it's just reusing all of your scripts, all of your command files, and even your unattended scripts always over again, and things will be much easier. But something certainly that you can investigate Nano server, which is a great thing. Now, let me jump back to my PowerPoint slide here. Here we go. And let me talk about the next thing. The next thing I want to talk about is shielded virtual machines. Now, this can be something which you're extremely interested in, or you might not even care. And the reason for that is simple. The idea of shielded virtual machines is to make sure that the virtual machine is shielded from the fabric. And what do I mean by that? I mean that if you have administrators that run on the hyper, or that work on the Hyper-V level, that work on the networking stack, on the storage stack, theoretically, they have potentially a way of reading out all of the data that is inside that virtual machine. Think about a storage administrator. The only thing he needs to do is copy the VHD or the VHDX, mount it somewhere, and he can read inside. The same for the Hyper-V administrator, and the networking administrator probably can sniff all the traffic that's going there as well. With shielded virtual machines, that needs a generation 2 virtual machines, some additional hardware requirements like TPM, so you can create virtual TPMs inside it, will give you the possibility to enable BitLocker inside the virtual machines and work with guarded fabric, which is a new role in Windows Server 2016, to make sure that that is not possible anymore. Because what will happen is that your virtual machine will be shielded off from that fabric. Even if the storage administrator wants to copy your VHDX, he literally won't have anything because it will fully encrypt it. Even if the Hyper-V administrator wants to do a direct connection to your virtual machine, he won't have that possibility because it will be blocked through that shielded virtual machine. Now, if you're working in your own environment on premises, you probably are not caring too much about this because, you know, you trust your administrators. They need to do the work and everything needs to running. But if you're going to start moving your virtual machines to a cloud vendor, again, could be Azure or something like that, but could also be your service provider, you might want to take that into consideration, and you might want to look at it at the shielded virtual machines the moment you put your workloads in another environment with administrators you don't know, you don't work with, and you probably don't trust. Another good reason could be if you put your virtual machines somewhere with a service provider in another country and you don't want the local governments or the local police enforcement or something like that to do a subpoena and to ask the data of you outside of the virtual machine. because you will own all the control and the keys, it won't be possible for them to open up these environments. So great new technology that comes with Windows Server 2016. Now let's have a look at networking and storage enhancements. Now I've placed this together. Unfortunately, it is a lot of information you're going to see. Quality of service is the first thing I would like to put your attention on. Now we kind of had this in Windows 2012 R2, but it wasn't completely the way most people wanted to. What happens now if you run a scale-out file service, you can do distributed storage quality of service, which means that one or more of your virtual disks can receive certain policies. Now, based on those policies, they will be able to get a maximum and a minimum of IOPS on that storage, and it will be enforced as well. Now, the minimum is pretty easy, unless, of course, you're running out of IOPS. At that moment, you have to take into consideration that the Hyper-V solution, what it will try to do is make sure that every virtual machine running on that storage will get at least its minimum. The maximum, well, it will get the maximum as long as it is possible. And you can play a lot with that. That means that depending on how you're running your infrastructure, you really have a good way now of limiting certain workloads on the resources that they're allowed to get. Another great enhancement we are seeing is deduplication optimization. Deduplication in Windows Server 2012 R2 was pretty popular, but it was rather limited in the sort of workloads it was supporting. Now it will actually be optimized as well, so if you got virtualized backup workloads, you can store them on a deduplicated volume, and it will be able to use the enhancements that come in Windows Server 2016. Certainly something you want to read up if you want to save storage on your virtualized backup workloads. Storage Spaces Direct is also something really cool to investigate. Just imagine that you got a couple of Hyper-V hosts, all with their own storage inside, and you're going to put a layer on top of that, which is called Storage Spaces Direct, and then automatically you will have shared storage. Now, don't be mistaken that it will work over a 1 gigabit network. You will have to look at some serious networking here, because in the end, Hyper-V host number 4 will might need to read a lot of information that is stored on a local disk, which is contained into Hyper-V01 or something like that. So it won't work over your standard 1 gigabyte network. But if you've got some decent hardware, you will be able to create, well, call it a cluster, although I shouldn't be calling that because that's a little bit wrong, but call it shared storage, basically on default hardware, or as we call it, commodity hardware that you can buy with some good networking in, maybe 16 disks in it, and then combine those and build that shared storage. That will actually make it very easy if you need to increase your host very quickly, because you will be able to add additional nodes, or maybe even decrease, which of course might not be the best thing to do, but you never know. Other great improvements, and my on the storage side, probably my number one thing you need to learn is REFS. Now, don't get me wrong, when you're going to deploy a Hyper-V host, your operating system still will work on NTFS. It's still not possible today to have that on REFS, but try to experiment already by putting your data drives where you're going to store your virtual machines, by storing those on REFS. The reason why I say that is there is a lot of improvements with VHDX format that can actually benefit from REFS. A great example here is when you create a fixed virtual disk of, let's say, 100 gigabytes, and you do this on NTFS, it can take a couple of minutes till, you know, hours, depending on the size you want to create. REFS will probably do that in half a minute. The same if you're applying a snapshot, and afterwards you need to merge the snapshot into the running virtual machine, it can take quite a while if you run that on NTFS, which means you're losing resources, your production is slower, and you are actually on risk of not delivering the performance you promised to your business units. Doing that on RAFS will make it much faster because it won't do a merge anymore, but it will just work with metadata. So certainly something you want to have a look at. And then on the networking side, there are quite a few improvements on the virtual switch as well. One of them being that there's a new switch type. Let me jump back quickly to my environment. Here we go, back to my server. And let me go back to PowerShell. And the reason why I'm going to go to PowerShell is because, let me show you that. I cannot do this in TP4 in the UI. So if I'm going to go to my Hyper-V settings on my host, sorry, to my virtual switch manager, and let me quickly remove this one, then what you get is I've got my local area network, which is an external, an internal, or a private network. And if I'm going to go to new virtual network switch, you will see exactly the same options I have. However, what Microsoft did is made a new type, and that new type is a network address translation switch, a NAT switch. And simply by using PowerShell, and let me do this here, I'm going to create a new switch type, which I hope will now since I just deleted it. And it probably will tell me there's indeed a issue because it will still exist. Let me quickly see if I can try it again. And if it's fixed now. Ah, that's a shame. I should have done it before the presentation. My apologies about that. I probably will need to clean that up first, but maybe I can make it just... So let's try again. But you can see I'm creating a new virtual switch, and that the switch type is NAT instead of an external, an internal, or a private. And then I can actually add a new NAT rule to it, which will give me more information and which I can build at that point in time. Sorry about this demo failing, but you can see we've got a new switch type. It's not in the UI yet, but we hope that will there. So for the moment, you need to use PowerShell. All right, let's go to my next. Nope, wrong presentation. This should be it. And let's talk about a few more things that you want to look at. Here we go. I see it again. What else do we got? PowerShell. PowerShell, I can't stress it enough. I'm saying this every presentation I do for the last couple of years. If you haven't started with PowerShell, you're late in the game. It's 5 after 12. A lot of the functionality in Windows Server 2016 won't be visible in the UI anymore, and you will need to use PowerShell. Everything you can do in the UI, you can use PowerShell already, and of course, as I said, many more. Now, one of the things I want to stress out is something which is called PowerShell Direct. PowerShell Direct is a way of connecting to your virtual machines, even if that virtual machine is not connected on your network, fully firewalled, whatever you want to do, and with a simple command, you can actually jump to that virtual machine and do some actions on it. Two ways: enter PS session with the VM name or the VM object, or you can use invoke command as well and use a script block to do more commands at the same time remotely. What you do need to know is that you need to be connected to a Windows 10 or Windows Server 2016 TP4 in this case host. The VM needs to run Windows 10 or Windows Server 2016 TP as the guest OS, otherwise it won't work. And you need to have, of course, some credentials. Some of these will change by the time we're GA, but at this time, this is the necessary things. Again, let me just show you how that works. It's actually pretty easy. And with a bit of luck, you should be able to see this very soon. Here we go. Now let me go to my PowerShell set Linux No, so PowerShell Direct. Let me clear here for a second. Let me show you how it works. So first I'm going to do a simple IP config, very easy, that shows you that the IP of the machine I'm working on, which is a Windows 10, is 1.240. And the next thing I'm going to do is do that enter PS session and simply connect to a virtual machine name. I'm going to do this again, and it's going to ask me credentials. Why is that? Well, I am not using pass-through simply because they are in a different domain. Now, if I can type, that should give me the connection. And you can see in my ISE here already that my comments are changing. And that is actually connecting to that server. And now, if you look closely, you will see that I am connected to that Hyper-V nested virtual machine and not anymore to my Windows 10. Now, if I'm going to do an IP config again, you will see that I have a different IP address, which means I am working on a different server. How to disconnect? Very simple. Just say exit PS session and you're out again. So this gives you a great way of configuring a lot of the virtual machine through PowerShell from the host without actually needing to have direct access to your virtual machines, which also means that your hosts can be somewhere in a network that's completely separated from your production environment or vice versa. You still have access to that virtual machine. Great new functionality that comes with Windows Server 2016. All right, that was PowerShell Direct. Now let's continue and let's look at the virtual machine itself. And there are quite some enhancements and changes there as well. One of the things that is changed is the virtual machine configuration and the format. Now, those of you who have been following Hyper-V for a while, they know that each time there's a new version, you will see the version number of a virtual machine, which is basically a hardware level, more or less, changes. With TP4, we're currently at 7.0. If you were running TP3, it's 6.2. The difference is that you're probably going to have to manually update it if you bring in virtual machines from a previous version. That's pretty easy to do that. You have PowerShell and you can actually do it through the UI well. I believe that started from TP4, but do remember that the virtual machine needs to be off to be able to do that. The format of a virtual machine has changed as well. Those who know in 2012 R2 and before, you could just open actually the config file of a virtual machine and read how it was configured. Now it is binary and it is now a VMCX file. Now you might say, why is that interesting? This is very interesting for performance. Microsoft has proven and has showed that if you're running quite a few virtual machines in your environment, the binary format is way more performant compared to the plain text, which we used before. I'm going to show you a few things in a couple of seconds. Another thing I want to talk about as well are the integration services. There's no more integration services ISO. So there's no more way of having your virtual machine, right-click, mount the ISO, and then do the installation. The integration services now will be delivered through Windows Update, which means updating your integration services to the latest version will be in the hands of the tenants, or at least those who are controlling the virtual machines. Now that makes it interesting because service providers, for example, or larger companies had either no control over the VM, so they couldn't update the integration services, or if they updated the integration services to the latest version, it could break certain things. And now it becomes completely in the hands of the tenants, which also means that Microsoft has the possibility to quickly update integration services more often now compared to before. If you have Linux virtual machines, Unix, then you will see that the Linux integration services or the FreeBSD integration services, they're either built in into the ISO already, or some of the distros will require download and will need to be done manually. Talking about Linux, one of the new options here is Linux Secure Boot. secure boot option was already a possibility in Windows Server 2012 R2 for Windows. Now you can do that with Linux as well, but do know that you need generation 2 virtual machines. At that point in time, and you can read them right here, you've got Ubuntu, SUSE, Red Hat Enterprise, and CentOS, and a couple of later. And just this morning, I've read that Microsoft is going to add a few more that will support this. Also very important, if you do this and you create your virtual machine, before you start that virtual machine, you need to use this PowerShell command to make sure that it uses the secure booting. If you do this afterwards, it won't be possible anymore. What else can we do in a virtual machine? It's hot add certain components. Now, we already had the possibility to add certain, well, virtual hardware to a running virtual machine, but what we can do now is we're going to have the capability to add virtual network cards to a running virtual machine, although that will require a generation 2 virtual machine. But you will also be able now to live change the memory of a running virtual machine. What you can do is you can remove some memory, you can add some memory, even if you've chosen static memory. This can be done on both generation 1 and generation 2 virtual machines, and do also know that if you want to add memory, that can only work, of course, is there, if there's still memory available on the host. All right, before I jump to clustering, let me show you a few of these enhancements. I'm going to go to my server again. There we go. And let me show you a couple of things. The first thing I want to show you is, let me see. Here we go. Update virtual machine version. Let us start with that one. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to run a quick one-liner that gives me all of my virtual machines and the versions. Now you can see I've got a couple of ones that are already at TP4 version, so 7.0, and a few of them that are still at 6.2, which is the TP3. Now there are two ways of updating those. One of them is just going to one of those virtual machines, Nano 02, which is still at 6.2, and then say upgrade configuration version, or make yourself easy. Let me change this to Core 02. Oops. And run it right here. Oh, sorry, not Core 02. That's, of course, not the name. That's better. And automatically run this so it's updated. Now, if we're going to quick look here now, you will see that this virtual machine has been updated to 7.0. Now let me quickly also show you the VMCX format, and I'm going to go to my data drive. I'm going to go to Nano Server Virtual Machine, Virtual Machines, Hyper-V Nested, and you will see here that now we've got a VMCX format instead of the previous format, which is binary, because if I want to open this with Notepad, I can quickly try, but I'm pretty sure that this one will fail. Here we go. You're going to see I've got everything binary and you can't read it anymore as before. A few other things I wanted to show you. Hot adding, we've got Hyper-V nested here, which is running. I'm going to go to my settings. You can see that if I want to, I actually have the possibility now to change my memory. Not going to do that simply because it will break a few things, which I still need to show you. But something else I can show you is I can go to add hardware. I can just simply add a network adapter and maybe even connect it again to the LAN or something like that. Now let me remove this. But you can see it's now possible to automatically remove add NIC files without any issues while it is running. Then I've got a Linux machine here. I have run this command, which is set secure Linux boot. So set VM firmware, the name of the virtual machine, and then this boot template. And now you're going to see if I'm going to go to settings and I'm going to go security, then it will say secure boot is enabled. And it uses this specific certificate authority to make sure that it is enabled. Quickly see if I needed to show you something more. And I think that was it for these type of demos. All right, let's go back to my PowerPoint, and we are at number 6, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, number 6, clustering. One of the most important things for Hyper-V is the rolling cluster upgrade. Now, the rolling cluster upgrade will give you a possibility to one by one migrate your Hyper-V hosts to a new version 2 Windows Server 2016. And as long as you're working on that upgrade, your cluster will stay in mixed mode. But it does mean that you won't have no more downtime because you can do everything live. You clean out one host, you live migrate all of the virtual machines to the other ones, you upgrade it to Windows Server 2016, and then the entire cluster will stay at the 2012 R2 functional level until you use the PowerShell commandlet update cluster functional level. Now, this is pretty cool because that means you can do all of these different, you can do your update in different steps. The nice thing is that your virtual machines will also remain at the previous version, as I showed you with version 6.2, or in the case of 2012 R2 version 5. And the nice thing about this is that as long as you're not happy with the upgrade to Service 2016 and it's not fully configured the way you want, you will stay working in the functional level that you were. The moment you're happy, you can do all of these upgrades and you can start working in 2016. Now, this is something important to learn because, as I already said in the beginning, updates and upgrades will come on a more frequent basis, starting with Windows Server 2016, which also means that you'll probably need to do this rolling cluster upgrade more than once or more than once a year, maybe a couple of times a year, depending on how many updates Microsoft will bring out, which means this is something you really need to get the hang on it, especially if you want to do this not on the weekends or not on the evenings, but just during the day while the production continue to run. Great new functionality, easy to use, but it is a mind change of how you do your upgrades, and it's certainly worth to investigate before you do this the first time. So this is kind of how it works, the rolling cluster upgrade. You've got your R2 cluster, only 2012 R2 nodes. Then you're going to go into a mixed OS mode cluster. So you're going to add one 2016. You're going to do live migrations and so on. Do note that you can do live migration from 2016 to 2012 R2 and vice versa, as long as it stays in that functional level, in that mixed cluster. And the moment every server is at 2016, then you can say, you know what, this is the moment to update my cluster. But afterwards, of course, your virtual machines or your cluster cannot go back to Windows Server 2012 R2 service anymore. Good. Some other things that are interesting to look at when you look at clustering, there's now something which is called Storage Replica, which is synchronous, which is free, comes out of the box and will give you the possibility to go from storage, whatever you're using, to other storage, whatever you're using, and actually replicate all of your virtual machines on the store layer. If you're using clustering with a witness, now instead of having a dedicated server for it, you can actually use a resource in Azure as well. Virtual machine resiliency is changed. What does it mean? You can now tell clustering that your workloads, your clustered workloads, are virtual machines, which means they will think differently before they do the failover. If there is a couple of seconds network interruption, it won't do the failover immediately, and there are many more rules that you can look at specifically for virtual machines, which should enable us to have less failover of our virtual machines. I think that's a good thing that they finally thought about that specific workloads for the resiliency. If you got failover clusters that are located at different sites, you can make them now site aware, which is also very handy, so you don't get into the split brain scenario or something like that. And probably the most important for many people, there is now actually a possibility to create a workgroup cluster, which has no dependencies on Active Directory. I know many of people I talked to were waiting for this already for a very, very long time. Good. Now let's look at Hyper-V Manager. Of course, I should say, if you've got quite a few hosts, you need to work with System Center Virtual Machine Manager. If you don't like System Center Virtual Machine Manager, there are always third-party tools like Five9 Hyper-V Manager, for example. But in the case you're just using the standalone UI Hyper-V Manager, you will see that Microsoft is actually making some changes to it as well. To start with, something we really requested for a long time already, they're going to support alternate credentials. And more, it's also going to have finally the possibility to manage some earlier versions. So the Hyper-V Manager in 2016 will give you the possibility to manage Server 2012 and Server 2012 R2, if I'm not mistaken. And last but not least, it's using an updated management protocol as well, which means you won't be dependent anymore on Kerberos completely. You won't be dependent on specific firewall rules. You can just use CRED SSP, for example, over port 80, which will make your management life a lot easier. Now, let me quickly jump back to my server here and show you quickly, here we go, what I mean by that. So one of the things I wanted to show you is I'm running here Hyper-V 04, which is actually a Windows 10 Hyper-V, but I want to connect, for example, to I think it's the one, and you will see it will fail, but that's not that important, Hyper-V 01. And Hyper-V 01 is a Windows Server 2012 R2. Now, the way it works today, and I'm hoping it will change by GA, but the way it works today is that if you want to connect to a previous version, then you can't use the connect as another user yet. So if I want to connect to Hyper-V 01, the user I'm running today will need to have the Hyper-V rights on that other server. And still will need to be in the same domain. Again, I'm hoping that changes. However, if this would have been a 2016 TP4 server, then if it would have been in another domain, you can actually choose to connect as another user. You could, for example, go to another domain. Unfortunately, you will see it fail because it is a 2012. But that shows you that there's now the possibility to start connecting differently, which means you will be able, and here you go, we got a failure because of that, you will be able to, with one Hyper-V console, will have the possibility to manage different hosts in different domains with different users. So I think that is quite a big improvement. All right, let's go back to the PowerPoint. And let's have a look at some more items. Production checkpoints. And this is a rather important as well. If I'm not mistaken, we're at number 8. Yes. So production checkpoints are the follow-up of what we know as checkpoints today in Windows Server 2012 R2. For those of you who are still using older versions, that will still be renamed snapshots, but Microsoft decided to rename it to checkpoint at a certain point in time. But the difference with a production checkpoint is that you can look at it as a backup. Because what it's going to give you is a point-in-time image of a virtual machine. A point-in-time image that will give you full support for application workloads, while the standard checkpoints that you know in 2012 R2 will just use the safe state technology. This will actually use the VSS on the Windows technology to give you that application consistent point-in-time image. Don't forget, this is still not a backup solution because you're not going to script something that takes a production checkpoint every whatever, because you will get a long list of checkpoints and your resources will probably have serious issues. However, it is possible to now quickly do a production checkpoint, test a few things out, and then revert the checkpoint again. If you're running Linux, then you will see it's going to be file consistent with a file system buffer flush. So do think if you have specific applications running on Linux, you might need to do a pre and a post script on that. You can still switch to the standard methods. But do you know if you create a new virtual machine that by default it will use a production checkpoint? And if we think further and we think about this new type of checkpoint, Microsoft also will implement a native change block tracking into Windows Server 2016, which will make the lives of the backend vendors a lot more easier, because then they don't need to create that filter driver anymore themselves, and it will improve the overall stability. Let me quickly jump again to my desktop. Here we go. And let me show you. Let's go to my Hyper-V nested again. Let's go to the settings. And what you will see here in the checkpoints is that they are enabled. I'm using the production checkpoints. And this is the default, by the way, I will fail over to a standard checkpoint in case the production fails for whatever reason. I can choose and change it here. I can also do the checkpoint file location. What I did is actually make some sort of script, because what happens is I don't want to fail over to a standard checkpoint, because you know the big reason why I want this production is not the user safe state anymore. So what I'm going to do is I'm quickly going to say this VM Hyper-V nested, make the checkpoint type production only, and I'm going to change the snapshot file location as well. Here we go. And if I'm going to look now, and I will need to close it first to my settings, then you will see that I will only take a production checkpoint now at a different location, and in case something goes wrong, I will at least get a warning and I can try to fix it and continue to use the production checkpoint. Brings me to the next point, and probably a very interesting for many people, which is nested virtualization. Nested virtualization is something we've been asking for years. Many of you have been asking this for years, and it's finally possible. It's also something that VMware has always been supporting and throwing at Microsoft. Haha, you do not support this. From Windows 10 build 10.5.6.5, this will work, but it does have some restrictions, meaning that only Intel runs at this time. So AMD is not yet supported as CPU, keep that in mind. It is possible in TP4 now also, but again, same restriction, only Intel. Dynamic memory needs to be off, so that specific virtual machine, in my case, a nested virtual machine which had static memory, it cannot use dynamic memory, because that won't work, and you need to run a specific script first before it can run. Now, why would this be interesting? Many people will say that is great for demo environments, proof of concept, but what Microsoft actually is doing is making this quite performance good. And the performance is already good in TP4, and they want to improve it more, which suddenly makes it very interesting to run Nano Hyper-V hosts, and then in that Nano Hyper-V, you're going to run additional Nano Hyper-V to make it nested virtualization. And what you get is the possibility to build a private cloud into a public cloud, or a private cloud into a private cloud. So a lot of new opportunities arise. Now, we're not 100% certain if they are going to do it or not, but one of the discussions we had a couple of weeks ago when we were at Redmond was make this available on Azure. So I can actually deploy Hyper-V hosts on Azure, which suddenly makes that all of my tooling, all of my third-party application, basically everything I'm using in my private cloud becomes available in my public cloud as well. And if I then extend my private cloud to my public cloud through a VPN with Azure, I suddenly have an extended data center where I can continue to use my management as I have been doing already. And that makes it extremely interesting. I still have a couple of minutes, so let me just quickly show you that it works rather well. I'm gonna go to my server again. I'm gonna close this one. And you will see here, I've got my Hyper-V nested virtual machine. I'm going to open this up, connect, and inside this virtual machine, Oh, I'm probably gonna have to type in my password. Here we go. Is a Windows Server 2016 technical preview 4? And I'm gonna go now to Hyper. Looks like I turned off my search. So let me go Windows Administrative Tools, Hyper-V Manager. You will see that this server is also running Hyper-V, and I'm actually running another virtual machine in there, which is a core virtual machine. So you can see that it's perfectly possible to nest now, which means on one host you can build clustered Hyper-V hosts for testing. But as I said, the more they can work on the resources consumption, the more interesting it will become for mixing different clouds together, for working with clouds in Azure, and so on. Good. And let's go to the last one. And the last one, what I kind of did is I just said, what else do we have? And there's actually way more that can be used. Containers, you probably heard of it. The thing is it interesting already to work with it today? It depends. Go talk to your developers, because that is kind of the biggest use case we see today. If they are interested in this, then you might want to investigate it on Hyper-V or directly on a Windows Server 2016. But the important thing about containers is, will you have a use case for it or not? I already told it a couple of times, but I wanted to stress it out again. There's Windows as a service. If you're running Windows Client 10 already, familiarize yourself on how the updating mechanism work, because some sort of the same type of update mechanism will come to Windows Server as well, and you will need to learn to update your environments more quicker, and that is rather important. There is still much more to investigate. If you know a couple of my friends, such as Didier Van Hooyen, such as Adrian Finn, Carsten Raphael, you know that they have been talking about RDMA enhancements, enhancements on the virtualization networking stack, for example, besides NVGRE, which was supported in Windows Server 2012 R2, NVXLAN will be supported as well, just like VMware does. So there is still much, much more to investigate on the fabric layer. There's still much more to investigate on Active Directory and so on. Any questions? Again, if you want to reach me at Mike Ressler or mike@veeam.com. And I think, Louis-Philippe, the only thing left for me to say is thank you very much for joining me this morning on the session. I'm hoping you're going to take the time to work with TP4 during the holidays, or when it's less stressful at work, which is probably during the same period. And that you get to learn it as fast as possible, so you're ready when Windows Server 2016 GAs. Thank you very much.